Let's look at a third area, our emotions. See, a lot of us have grown up in a culture where it's not okay to have emotions. Well, let's take a look at what we might call a healthy approach to your emotions if you want to have high self-esteem. Because if you feel bad about your feelings, that lowers your self-esteem. We teach people a process called the total truth process. It's a process in which any feeling you have, you need to express in a way that doesn't hurt other people. But we find that feelings come in groups, and that what you need to do is you need to express 5 or 6 layers of feelings. The first layer is what we call anger. Whenever you're upset, there's usually anger inside of you. And again, in our culture, it's real hard for women to do that. When women get angry, what do they usually do?
Cry.
And when men get sad or hurt or scared, what do they usually do? Either withdraw or get angry. Okay, they either pull away or they slam the door and go off, you know, that kind of thing. And so we kind of wired up to express them differently. But anger is usually at the top. And underneath all anger, there's usually hurt, sadness, pain. And underneath the hurt and the anger, there's usually fear and self-doubt, feeling of insignificance, or I'm incompetent, or I'm unlovable, something's wrong with me. And underneath the anger, the hurt, and the fear is usually what we call regret and remorse. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. Or taking responsibility. And I'll give you an example of all this in just a second. The fifth level is I want. Underneath all anger, there's some want that got frustrated. Something you wanted you didn't get or afraid you won't get. And then finally, we have what we call forgiveness, understanding, appreciation, and love. Maybe give you an example of how this might work in your life. I remember a time when my dad was trying to get me up to go to school in the morning. And he yelled down, "Jack, are you up?" And I said, "Yep." He said, "Don't hear any feet moving around down there." So I took one foot out of the side of the bed and I hit it on the floor a few times like that. He said, "Okay." Then I rolled back and went to sleep. He comes down about a half hour later expecting to see me up and ready to go to school because I went to school in a carpool. And if I was late, that meant he usually had to drive me. So he saw me asleep and he got really angry. And he came into my room and he basically hit me a few times. Now, I used to go around for years complaining that I was an abused child. Okay? But let's see how I might heal that experience using this total truth process, this total experience of emotions. I might say to my dad, "I'm really angry at you because you hurt me, you hit me, and I'm angry. You shouldn't do that. You shouldn't do that to a kid." And I would express my anger, "You dumb son of a gun. How could you possibly do that?" And I would rant and rave for a minute and let that out. Underneath the anger is the hurt. I'd say, "I'm really hurt that you would do that to me, Dad. You know, I was just a little kid and you were hitting me and beating me up and I'm hurt that you would do that." And I would share the pain that I had in my body and that I felt and the sadness and the crying that I wanted to do. And underneath the hurt is the fear. "Dad, I'm really scared of you. And I was afraid you were going to hit me and beat me up. In fact, I remember when you used to drink, I used to be always afraid, is he going to blow up again? Is he going to hit me? And I was afraid. Here's this person that's supposed to protect me and make me safe, and you were scaring me." And then maybe the self-doubt in there. Maybe I'm not lovable. Maybe I'm the kind of kid who deserves to get hit. I've seen a lot of people become resigned to that. And then the regret and the remorse. This is where I have to own my piece. See, was I a total victim? No. Okay. I wasn't a total victim because I helped set it up. If I hadn't lied to my dad, would I have gotten hit? No. Now, it'd be nice if you could lie to your dad and still not get hit. Be better parenting, perhaps. But the fact is, I was not a total victim. So I would say, "Dad, I'm sorry that I lied to you. I'm sorry also that my mother came running into the room and started yelling at you." This was my stepdad, see, and she was yelling, "You never liked my kids as much as your own," and blah, blah, blah. And I remember smiling inside, going, "Yeah, get him, Mom." You know? I might also say, "I'm sorry you had to work so hard, 2 jobs to make ends meet, Dad. And I'm sorry you were frustrated. I'm sorry you didn't have the skills you needed to be more centered and more effective." Next, underneath, I'd say, "Dad, all I really want is for you to love me. I want you to hold me. I want to feel safe with you. I want you to care for me. I want you not to hit me when you get angry. I want you just to talk about it. I want you to know that I'm just a little kid and kids make mistakes and I was tired. I'd played football the night before and I was wiped out." And then forgiveness. "Dad, I forgive you for hitting me." Understanding, compassion. "I know you were frustrated. I know you didn't want to have to drive me to school. I know you were afraid of being late for your own job. I appreciate you for being my dad. Appreciate you for working two jobs and working hard. And finally, I love you. See, now if I take and I go through all those levels, I can complete any past negative event. And I can let go of the emotions. And as I learn to express my emotions, my self-esteem goes up. I feel good about me. And I feel alive because I feel my feelings inside. We've had people in our seminar where we'll break people into pairs, and one person will pretend that the other person is their father or their mother or their past husband or whatever, and they will do the total truth with them, and they'll spend 5 minutes in each segment yelling and crying and talking and saying I want and forgiveness and so forth. And I've had people report to me that after the seminar, colitis that they'd had for 8 years disappeared because they had all these spasms and tension in their stomach and in their gut. Another guy had a migraine headache for 2 years, couldn't get rid of it, no matter what medication he used. Finished the total truth process, the headache went away, hasn't come back since, because he was holding all that emotional tension in his body. So I want to encourage those of you listening to this to do that kind of experience, to do the total truth anytime you're upset. And if you don't feel comfortable saying the words, write what we call a total truth letter and write the words down. Write the paragraph. You don't have to send the letter. You can burn it when you're done. But get it out of you. You know, we're working with ourself. There's a little process we go through, and it's called awareness, acceptance, and expression. And we have to first be aware of ourself, aware of a judgment we might have, or aware of a part of ourself that we might reject, or aware of a part of ourself that we disown. And then, after we become aware of it, then the next process is to accept it, to just accept that that's the way we are, and to be okay with that. And then finally is to learn how to express that part of ourselves in a way that brings it completion. And I talk a lot about rejected and disowned parts of ourself. Like when I was a kid, let's say my parents were very strict in terms of sexuality. And so I grow up thinking that if I'm sexual, that I'm a bad person. So I reject that part of myself. I pretend I don't have it. I might even become celibate. Not out of a true desire to be a spiritual person, but out of a need to not be bad. See, maybe I've got a part of me that's funny. And when I was a kid, I made a joke and my dad didn't like it. So he sent me to my room. And then I decided, well, it's not safe to be funny anymore. So I lose my sense of humor. So we have parts of ourselves that we do, that we express, like being late or eating too much or being judgmental. And I call those rejected parts because I do them and then I feel bad about them. A disowned part would be a part of me I don't even express anymore. It's like totally subterranean. I've locked it inside of myself. And in order to have high self-esteem, to be a whole person, we have to re-own these disowned and rejected parts of ourselves. And the main thing is to realize that underneath every aspect of our being, there's a function, a purpose, a valuable contribution that this part of me can make. What we need to do is we need to accept every aspect of ourself because it's who we are. And someone once said, you may as well learn to love yourself because you're going to take yourself everywhere you go. You can't take a vacation from yourself. So if there are parts of me I judge, I need to learn to love those. Another thing I want to talk about in relation to emotions are two negative emotions that have to do with guilt and resentment. Guilt and resentment. And so what I want to do is teach you how to get rid of guilt and resentment in your life. Guilt is the result of having a belief about how you should be and then having your behavior not match that belief. I had a guy in a workshop. He had been in Vietnam and he wasn't able to make eye contact with anyone in the group. He'd look and he'd look away instantly. So I had him come up to the front of the room and I held his head with my hands and I had him look into my eyes. And he did that for about 5 seconds. He started to close his eyes. I said, no, keep your eyes open. He kept his eyes open. About 30 seconds later, he started to shake. He started shaking more and more violently. You could see this fear and terror. And then he started to cry and then he collapsed into my arms and he sobbed for about 10 or 15 minutes. Didn't stop. Finally, I said, what was that all about? He said, every time I look into somebody's eyes, I see the people I killed in Vietnam. He said, I was a point man in the Marine Corps. The average life expectancy of a point man was about 2.5 months. You usually get shot. You're the guy out front, first guy to come around the corner. And he said, more than once in hand-to-hand combat with a bayonet on the end of my gun, I would stick that bayonet into someone's stomach and literally, like less than 3 feet away from my face, watch their eyes and that look of disbelief as they died right in front of me. And he said, I felt guilty about that ever since. And I said, in order to feel guilty, you have to have a belief about how you should be that doesn't match your behavior. What was your belief? He said, well, my belief was good people don't kill people. And then he said, I killed at least 15 people. Now, the way to get rid of guilt is you've either got to change your belief or change your action. Okay? So if I believe that it's not good to have affairs and I'm having an affair, I can change my belief and say it's okay to have affairs, or I can change my action called stop having affairs. Don't have any more in the future. But can I change my past actions? No. See, he can't go back and unkill those people in Vietnam. He can't unsteal the money he stole from the grocery store when he was 15. See, you can't undo the past action. So if you want to get rid of the guilt, what you have to do is let go of the belief. So he decided he would change his belief the following way. Good people don't kill people, except when they're 18 years old, in a foreign land, at war with another country, and people are trying to kill them. See, then he said, you know, under that condition, I guess I had the right to save my own life by killing someone else. Now, does that mean killing is great? No. It simply means that in that situation, he could reframe it and say, okay, I'm going to let go of that belief and hold that I'm a good person. See, this guy that killed these people in Vietnam, he was not living a happy life for himself. He wasn't a good person to be in a relationship with. He couldn't be intimate because he couldn't make eye contact. He felt bad about himself. He certainly wasn't helping anyone in Vietnam by feeling guilty. He wasn't helping anyone in America. He wasn't helping himself. So he had to let go of that. Now, what he did do, by the way, is he decided as a way that he could help balance that action is he started working to raise money for the adoption of Asian children whose parents had been killed during the Vietnamese War. See, you're always doing the best you can with the awareness, skills, and information you have to meet your needs. You never could do anything different. See, try to do something different from what you're doing right now. You can't. You can only do what you're doing. And you can only did what you did. You couldn't have done anything different. If you could have done it, you would have done it. People say, well, I knew better. You might have known better. But given the pressure that was on you and the needs you had and the skills you had and the courage you had and the information you had, you still couldn't have done anything other than you did. So the key here is to forgive yourself, change your beliefs, and let go. John Enright says the only function of guilt is to maintain the belief that you're a good person in the face of actions that deny your belief about what a good person is. So you get to maintain your self-image about being good in the face of acting out of sorts with that. And the fact is who you are is who you are. So give yourself permission to be that. Resentment works the same way. When I resent somebody, like for calling me a name, being late, playing their stereo too loud, it's because I have a belief about how they should be that they're not matching. I have a belief about how the world should be and the world doesn't match my image. How many of you have ever resented the traffic? Did it ever make the traffic go faster? Did it make you feel worse sometimes? You get all tightened up, you know? I mean, the traffic is the way it is. So if you don't want that feeling inside of feeling, you know, uncomfortable and uptight, it's called learning to accept the world the way it is. Learning to give people permission to be who they are. And the other thing I found is I give people permission to be who they are. I give myself permission to be the way I am. I give myself permission to own that part of me. Sometimes when I see someone that's getting what I want that I'm not willing to risk for, I resent them for having it so I don't have to confront my unwillingness to take a risk to get it. And again, it's a self-esteem issue because if I thought I could do it, if my self-confidence was high enough, then I wouldn't need to resent them. Let's look at the next function here real briefly. It's called the body. The body. In order to have high self-esteem, you have to relate to your body. Number one, you have to love and accept your body just like it is. I don't know about in Chicago, but in L.A., in L.A. Magazine, in the last issue, we had 17 pages of ads for plastic surgeons. 17 pages. Some of them full-page ads that sell out at about $5,000 a page. Now, what that tells us is a lot of people out there don't like the way they look. They feel inadequate. They think somehow they've got to look different to be attractive. And if I go and have liposuction, if I go and have a tummy tuck, if I go and have a facelift, if I get my nose changed, my eyelids, which are all black and drooping, I'll get those lifted up and the color changed and so forth, then I'll be acceptable. But I think what's critical when you're running out and doing this stuff to your body is where you're coming from when you do it. Are you coming from a place of, I'm not okay the way I am, I'm not it, so I've got to go and do all these things so I'll be acceptable? Or are you coming from a place of, I'm a wonderful person, and just like maybe using makeup to enhance myself, I'm doing this to make myself even more beautiful, to make myself even more an excellent vehicle for my spirit, you know, as my body. But I see a lot of people who've had lots of plastic surgery, and it's all out of this sense that I'm not okay the way I am. Somehow I'm afraid that if I look a day over 30, I won't be valuable anymore. You know, we really have to look at our body and realize our body's fine the way it is, and not come from the position that somehow I'm not okay. Because when you live your life from the context with your body that I'm not it, this isn't it, no matter what you do, whether you get thin, have a nose job, whatever, you're still holding the context, this isn't it. So we've got to learn to love our body and appreciate it and accept it just the way it is. For me, growing up, it was my chin. I used to have this belief that I had a receding chin and it wasn't okay. And I used to go to bed at night hitting my chin like this. I'd hit it with my knuckles, trying to build up a calcium deposit. Because literally, I discovered that when you hit on a bone, it builds up a calcium deposit. I hated my face so much, I would do that. But I grew a beard for 17 years. I had a beard covering up. And I would trim it in such a way that it looked like I had a big, strong jaw. You know, I'd let it grow down, then I'd trim it back at an angle like that. And I remember my wife, when she met me, I had this beard. And then about 5 years into our marriage, I shaved my beard. She freaked out. She said, there ought to be truth in packaging laws. Said, I thought I married this man. You look like a cross between a little boy, E.T., and a chipmunk. She said. Now, fortunately, my self-esteem was high at the time, and I was able to weather that. And we have to learn, ultimately, that our body is not our looks. One of the most powerful things you can do in terms of coming into a greater loving relationship with your body is something we call the nude mirror exercise. And what you do is find the largest mirror you can, like a full-length mirror that might be on the back of a door, or maybe your large bathroom mirror, and stand in front of that mirror and start at the top of your head and go all the way down to your feet, one part of your body at a time, and just notice anything about your body that you judge. Perhaps you think your nose is too big, or your hair is too thin, or your breasts are too big or too small, or your hips are too wide, or your legs are too fat. Whatever it is that you judge about yourself, just notice it. Just acknowledge that to yourself. See, because you've already been doing that all along. Now it's just time to bring it into awareness. And after you've made a list and you're really clear what those things are that you judge, then go back and take each part of your body that you judge and place your hands on that part. Like for me growing up, it was my chin. So what I would do is I would put my hands on my chin, and then I would send light from my heart down my arms, into my hands, into my chin, and I would visualize that light as the healing energy going into that chin, and then I would say the following words: please forgive me for judging you. I really love and appreciate you. I need you. And then talk about what the function of that part of your body is. For my chin, it would be, without you, I wouldn't be able to talk. I wouldn't have a jaw. There would be no teeth in my mouth. So I appreciate the fact that I can eat food and that I can talk. And I want to thank you for being there. Then I might have judged my stomach as being too big, and I can say, I love you. I appreciate you. So you haven't always looked like I thought you were supposed to, but I want you to know that I love you just the way you are, and I'm really grateful for you. And I would go on like that. I've had people tell me in our workshops, when we assign that as a homework assignment, that for them it's been one of the most powerful experiences in their life. They really start to feel loving toward a body that they might have judged since they were 14 years old. So I strongly recommend you do that as soon as possible. And you may want to do it more than once. How many of you have noticed as you've gotten older that your body has changed? Any of you notice that? Yeah, wrinkles and less hair and maybe a little overweight and, you know, all the skin gets a little bit more grainy and less smooth and so forth. And that's just part of what happens. But I've talked to a lot of people who are older, and some of you in the room can relate to this, that when you get older, you don't realize it except when you look at your body. How many of you have that experience where, like, maybe you're 50 or 60 and you still feel like you're about 20? Yeah, a lot of hands go up in the room. Because the essence of who you are doesn't change. Your body is just a vehicle to carry you around in, okay? And as it changes, you're still the same. I teach kids and I teach adults that it's like you're a gift in a package. When you get a Christmas present or a Hanukkah present, you usually don't save the wrapping, you throw it away. You keep the gift. And so whether your body is black, white, brown, yellow, old, young, thin, fat, doesn't matter. What matters is who you are inside. We start using our body like a car. We use it to get around in and do our life in. Most of us don't spend our time at car shows comparing our car to the next guy's car. And we need to give up comparing our body and start loving and nurturing our body just the way it is. I saw a quote once that said, if you treat your friends like you treat yourself, would you have any? And I think about not only emotionally, but physically. You know, we abuse ourselves. We don't get enough sleep. We eat food that's not nutritious. And what we need to do is to make sure we nurture our body by putting good things into it, and also nurture it in terms of relaxation, meditation, exercise. But those are the kind of things I'm talking about, with exercise, touch, listening to relaxation tapes, listening to relaxing music. Very, very powerful things to do for yourself. Another thing I want to talk about in relationship to body and self-esteem is breathing. I'd like to teach you a breathing technique. Now, many of you may know this, but we find that hundreds and thousands of people don't. And that's simply the difference between what we call chest breathing and stomach breathing, abdominal diaphragmatic breathing. They did a study. They went into a hospital ward, a cardiac ward, where they had 143 heart attack victims. And what they noticed is that none of them were breathing with their stomach. They were all breathing in their upper chest. They find that heart attacks are often associated with stress, which is associated with chest breathing. What we know is that the blood vessels that go through the lungs, 80% of the vessels that really take in oxygen are in the lower part of the lungs, not up in the top. So when you breathe up here, you can't get enough oxygen into the bloodstream. So when you're relaxed, you breathe down in your stomach. Will Schutz, who's very much involved in body work and in self-esteem, says you can tell a person's self-esteem by how deep they breathe, because oxygen is energy from the universe that supports you. And if you don't feel like you're worthy of support, you won't take in much air. And if you're worthy of support, you'll take in a lot of air, because you deserve to be taking in a lot. So what I'd like you to do with me for just a moment is I'd like you to place one hand on your stomach and one hand on your chest. Now, if you're driving a car as you're listening to this, just place one hand on your stomach, keep the other one on the steering wheel. Now, what I want you to do is to breathe, and I want you to take that hand that's on your stomach and push it out as you breathe. As you inhale, you're filling that up like a balloon. And then as you exhale, pull that stomach in. And do that a few times. Long, slow, easy breaths, and then exhale, feel the stomach going in. Inhaling, feel the stomach go out. One of the things I recommend is every day, maybe in the morning or in the evening, just take 5 to 10 minutes and concentrate on breathing into your stomach. That can relax your whole system. The last psychological function I want to talk about in terms of self-esteem right now is your intuition. So we've got our thoughts, our imagination, our emotions, our body, and our intuition. And we all have this little voice inside of our head that talks. Sometimes it's heard as a voice, sometimes it's more a felt sense. See, haven't you had that kind of experience where you start thinking about somebody and 2 days later you get a letter from them? Or you're thinking to call someone and they said, gee, I was just going to call you. How did they know? How did you know? We've all had that experience of knowing something and not quite knowing why we know, we just know we know. I've read numerous reports of mothers waking up at 3 a.m. and saying, something's wrong with my oldest son. And then they get a call like 2 hours later, their son was in an automobile accident on the way home from work or something. So we know that there's a way of tuning in. In order to have high self-esteem, you need to trust that inner voice. See, most of us as little kids were told not to trust. What do you know? You're just a little kid. And you began not to trust your own feelings. You began not to trust your own intuition. Have you ever had the experience where you're about to go out to work and a little voice says, take an umbrella, and you look and the sky's blue and you go, forget it, no way. And you go to work and sure enough, you're coming home, 3 o'clock or 5 o'clock, whatever, and it starts to rain. How did you know? See, somehow you knew without knowing how you knew. We've got to learn to trust that. Let me tell you a couple stories about how that's affected people in business. One of the most famous stories is about Conrad Hilton, the Hilton Hotels. And he wanted to buy a company called the Stevens Corporation, which was going to go to the highest bidder in a closed auction. And he submitted a sealed bid for $165,000. He awakened the next morning, and he had the number $180,000 in his head. Couldn't get it out of his head. So he changed his bid. And it was right at the last moment. He changed the bid, and he secured the property, which brought him eventually $2 million in profit. The next highest bid was $179,800. See, and if he hadn't raised his bid, he would have lost. But when you have that little inner voice inside, it's called start trusting it more. Now, the problem becomes, is every little inner voice in your head your intuition? You know? And the answer is obviously no. My experience has been when it's your intuition, there's a sense of peace, there's a sense of rightness. There may be a little fear because you're going to have to do something scary, like say something to someone that you might not normally say, because your intuition says do that. But there's not a sense of like terror, and there's not a sense of like upset, and there's not a sense of like greed or grasping. It's just a clear sense. I have another friend named Bert Dubin, and Bert's a real estate investor out in Los Angeles. He's also a public speaker. And Bert told me a story once that he was sitting by his fireplace at home, and Bert meditates a lot and has done a lot to develop his intuition. And all of a sudden, he heard this little voice in his head, and it said, go to Kingman, Arizona. And he said, wait a second, what could this be? And it was 11 p.m. And he thought, if I go to Kingman, Arizona now, I'm going to get there at 3 in the morning. That doesn't make any sense. So he decides to go to bed and wake up in the morning, like at 3 or 4, and then drive to Kingman. So he does that. Now, you have to realize, he's been trying to buy property in Kingman for over a year and a half. Can't find, there's just no four-corner property for sale. And whenever it comes up, he's always aced out because he's in L.A. Now, he doesn't know why he's going to Kingman. He just knows, I'm going to trust this little inner voice. So he goes to bed, and he wakes up, and he drives there, and he gets into Kingman at 8 a.m. And he pulls into this little Howard Johnson's where he normally goes to have breakfast or coffee. And he gets a paper out. And he's sitting there at the counter having a cup of coffee, reading the paper. And he notices that there's a four-corner property for sale. This valuable property, a store. And he goes to the real estate office where it's listed. So he gets to the real estate office at 9 a.m. They open the door. He goes right in. He says, I saw the ad. I'd like to buy this piece of property. They had it in escrow by 9:15. Now, he said, how come this property wasn't bought up by people up here? He says, well, let me tell you the story, the real estate agent said, let me tell you the story. He said, I got a call yesterday, and the guy wanted from New York to sell the property. And it was like about 3 o'clock. Now, at 4 o'clock is the last time you can get the classifieds in. So I thought I'd put, you know, the classified in the paper. And this morning I would call up all the real estate agents and I would, you know, let them know that the property was for sale. And he said, obviously, no one saw the paper. It came out at 8. You saw it first. You bought it. You have it. All because he heard this little voice says, go to Kingman, Arizona. He had no understanding why to go, but he trusted it. He followed his intuition. And Bert's told me 3 or 4 stories like that, where he's heard a little voice, don't make an offer yet, don't do this yet, do that, sell the boat, don't sell the boat. And turns out there's always some reason why he should have waited, and he did. So begin trusting that little voice inside. The way to build time into your life for that little voice is you have to have quiet time. Time to walk on the beach, take a shower, run, be with yourself, meditate. If you don't have quiet time in your life and you're always busy, 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 going, 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 it's very hard for that little voice to get in because there's so many loud voices all around. So make sure you do that for yourself.